Hello, this is the Podgoblin's Hat, a podcast about the Moomins.
This is episode 16, which is about inspiration, names, and the colossal delight at being alone.
I'm Nina, a person who revels in my own company.
I'm Dave, a person who tonight is alone with their tune, and tonight isn't tomorrow.
And we're reading all the way through Tove Jansson's Moomin's books together. It's the first time for me.
Whereas if I wrote my memoirs, the Moomin's would be featured pretty regularly.
We're reading the storybooks for children in order of publication, and eventually we will cover all of Tove Jansson's Moomin stories.
Today we're reading The Spring Tune, which is the first of the short stories in the collection Tales from Moomin Valley. So what are our themes for these stories, Nina? Oh, queen of the themes?
As always, one of our themes is relationships. And for these short stories, our other theme is fables. Fables are short stories, typically folk tales, passed down orally, often featuring anthropomorphized animal characters in a sort of like totemic way, I suppose, like quite archetypical, and they teach a moral lesson. That's what a fable is. Should talk about our editions.
I'm reading Tales from Moomin Valley, another of the Puffin editions, with one of the nicer covers from that collection, I guess.
Yeah.
It's just a singular picture of Snufkin in a tent with a creature that could very well be Sniff. This is the reissued in 2019 edition.
Yeah, and I've got the same, but the 2012 edition, which has a less nice cover with less colour. It seems to be illustrating the Invisible Child story. So it's just like a red staircase. Moomin Mama's going up the staircase. A set of clothes with no apparent child in them going up after her. And there's a pull quote from Lauren Child on the front, which is nice.
Which is, it's not just Tove Jansson's wonderfully strange fairy tale world that so appeals, but also her beautiful line work and exquisite sense of design.
Not the same quote.
Oh, what have you got from Lauren Child?
A beautifully strange world, exquisitely illustrated.
Yours is like the Nina edit of the first one.
Yeah. I think we should talk about the dedication as well to Sophia.
Yeah, and it's not just a dedication in words, but also thematically with those quotes in pictures too. So
yeah,
we've got to Sophia and then a lovely little picture of, we can assume, Sophia.
Yeah.
With a little creature.
Yeah. It's a lovely picture of a child that's sort of that child pose with the round back and like crouched right down with your feet flat to the ground.
And Sophia is Tove Jansson's niece and current keeper of the Moomin.
Yeah.
Definitely a part of, if not in charge of, the official Moomin's franchising.
And she would have been a little baby when this came out.
Right.
She was born in 1962. This came out in 1963.
This is the problem in some ways with having little people in your life and being like, because I've done this sort of thing, and being like, I'd like to write a story for them or some stories about them. It's the timing of it. Either you write your stories for those children, but by the time that the stories are ready, the children are really old.
Like Coraline by Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, or you write them when they're babies with the intention that they'll read them when they're older. And maybe they will, maybe they won't. They might have different interests by the time they're older.
Yeah.
It's very nice that Sophia is the keeper of the Moomin's torch going on into the future. But at the same time, I don't know if I want any of my nieces or my great nieces to do such things for my work. I don't want any of the younger people in my family to dedicate their life to my legacy.
No, I know. It's a bit Christopher Tolkien.
Yeah, exactly.
Isn't it?
I want them to create their own legacies. I want them to tell their own stories.
I think Rihanna Pratchett carries it well, but Rihanna Pratchett is also a writer in her own right in a different genre to her father.
Rihanna Pratchett is a good balance, yeah. Actually.
Are we ready for a quick synopsis, this quick story?
I am interested in hearing your quick synopsis of this quick story.
This is a story about Dave's favourite character, Snufkin. He is on his way back to Moomin Valley after spending the winter somewhere else. It's April. He's walking through a birch forest. He's got a tune brewing under his hat. He can just sort of feel it tickling at the edges of his consciousness. It's not quite ready, but it's so nearly ready. And he's thinking a little bit about Moomin Troll, but he's trying really hard not to think about Moomin Troll because the mere thought of Moomin Troll waiting for him is sort of killing the vibe a little bit.
And the tune is one part expectation, two parts spring sadness, and for the rest, just the great delight of walking alone and liking it.
So he meets a brook. And it's a beautiful brook. It's making lovely sounds. And he's like, I'm going to put that brook in my song. You know, actually, I'm going to write it its own song.
It's basically too good. Like, initially, it's like, oh, that would be an interesting instrument to add into my song. But then it's basically a symphony on its own.
Yeah.
You can't mess with that.
He makes camp for the night, gathers wood, he makes a fire, he cooks a soup. He has a little think about how he doesn't really care for other people's dinners.
He never cooked a dinner for other people if he could avoid it, nor did he care much for other people's dinners.
Then he's like, I'm just going to do the washing up, light my pipe, and then I'll get to this tune. But when he's doing the washing up, he is interrupted. He sees across the brook a pair of eager eyes looking at him, full of admiration and love. It's a little creep.
Little creep!
It's looking at him through like a thick fringe. And he's noticed quite a few of these little creatures in the woods. And he's like, oh, isn't that interesting? And they're always like, the smaller they are, the more skittish they are. But he didn't really want to think about them much. And this one is not skittering away. He tries to shoo it away. It doesn't. It jumps in the river to like join him on his side of it. It falls over in the water, but Snufkin's too bothered by the whole thing to actually help it out. So it sort of clambers up on the other side of the brook, all wet and shivering. And it says hello, and it wants to talk. And it starts fawning. He's like, oh, you're Snufkin. You know everything. Everybody's heard about you. Oh, it's such an honor for me, a little creep, to be in your great presence. And it, like, kills the tune for Snufkin. He can't think the tune anymore. So he's like, oh, fine, might as well talk since he's here. And so he tells the little creep that, like, it's actually not good for your sense of freedom to, like, really admire someone else. And the little creep is like, oh, of course, you would know best. You know everything. And you've got Moomin Troll waiting for you. How lovely to have someone eagerly awaiting you. And like, it makes Snufkin really angry because he's already feeling a little bit oppressed by the weight of expectation from Moomin Troll. So much so that he says, well, maybe I won't go to Moomin Valley. Maybe I'll go somewhere completely different.
Right, because he's projecting in some ways. He's telling the little creep to not admire him and that will make the little creep free. But he's feeling, I wish I didn't admire Moomin Troll,
yeah,
because then I would be truly free. And certainly, yeah, Moomin Troll is not free if he admires me so much. And he blooming well does, doesn't he? There's a lot of that stuff about, you know, oh my, he's got such a lot of feelings, this Moomin Troll.
It's a great line. While the little creep is there bothering him, he lets him in on a secret. He hasn't got a name. He's too small to have been named. And would Snufkin do him the great honour of naming him? Snufkin's like, oh, fine. And just as the little creep is going, he comes up with a name, as inspired by the bird calls he can hear in the forest. Titi-woo, a light beginning and a little sadness to round it off. Titi-woo throws back his head and howls his new name to the night. He loves it. And then goes off into the forest. And Snufkin is alone again. Snufkin is angry and resentful. Why don't they keep them home with their mothers? The tune is gone. The conversation keeps repeating on him. He can't stop thinking about everything the little creep said and everything he said back. He's feeling restricted. And he feels even a little bit sick. The next day, he sets off again toward Moomin Valley out of the birch forest. and it's just not working. Something about it isn't working.
Because he's caught in the middle of an anxiety spiral where he's obsessing over and over again about the things he just said to the little creep. And did he say them right or did he not? And he just can't stop thinking about them.
Was he kind enough or was he not?
Yeah, I can very much relate. And I know Nina can too.
So at the end of that day, he's like, nah, gotta go back. He turns around. As soon as he turns around, he starts to feel better. By night, he's back in the forest. He's walking around, searching for Titiwu, calling for Titiwu, can't find him. And then he sees there's a new moon. He's like, ah, time for a wish. Normally, he wishes for something like a new path or a new song. Today, he's like, no, I'm going to wish to find Titiwu. Then immediately does. Titiwu has something to show him. He's like, you wouldn't believe how my life has changed now that I have an identity. Now when things happen to me, they're really happening to someone and it matters that it's me, Titiwu. And he's like, look at this. I've moved out from my mother's house. My life is really starting. I've got a nameplate with my name on it for my new door. And Snufkin's like, oh, that's all very good. Do you want some songs or some stories? And Titiwu's like, no, I'm busy.
Yeah,
I've got things to be doing. And off he goes.
We have a classic, what would Snufkin do for Snufkin here? You know, as he was walking away, he asked himself, what would Snufkin do? And he realized, be kinder than I was in that moment.
Yeah.
And then he goes back to be Snufkin and he tries to be Snufkin and do what Snufkin would do, which is sing a song or tell a story. But
Titiwu doesn't want it anymore. He's like, life is so short. I've already wasted so much time. Gotta go. And then Snufkin is alone again in the birch forest. And his heart is full of joy. And the tune is back. And he is free. The end. Just like spring rain. Falling just like sheep. Falling just like shining down so hard. Falling out my face. Just like spring rain.
I guess, first of all, we should say what we thought of it. I really love it. It's one of my favourite Moomin stories. It's a short one. I've read it more times than I've read this book. And yeah, it's all Snufkin all the way through. You get to see a lot of sides of Snufkin in it.
Yeah.
Some different ones than we've seen before. I find that the more that Snufkin gets complicated by stuff, the better he is as a character.
Yeah.
He never loses the good qualities. He just gets new wrinkles.
He's a little bit sharper here.
He is. What did you think of it?
Oh, it's brilliant. It's such a good story about creativity. I can see it on an art level. I can see it on a muse level, on a sort of neurodivergent ADHD, not really having full power over where you put your attention kind of level.
Right.
On a non-monogamy level. If you want to see that in there, it's definitely a bit there.
Yeah, introvert, extrovert as well.
Yeah.
That kind of dynamic. So you liked it, I liked it.
We like it.
If it's done well.
As a fable, we've got Snufkin, who's standing in for like the archetype of the artist, I guess, the creative. And then you've got Moomin Troll / Titiwu, who are there as sort of distractions, obligations. And it's this tussle between those two things. What would you say the moral is?
To not get so lost in creativity that you stop being a human, or like a, in this case, a Snufkin.
A person, yeah.
Is actually as important as chasing the muse.
Yeah.
They're connected. And in fact, this is a thing that many of us who create have to learn.
Yeah.
And learn again, and learn again throughout our lives. And it's a balance, because you do lose something if you don't chase the muse as well.
Yeah.
And so it has to be both. Snufkin needs to have his aloneness, but he also needs to allow the world to interrupt him.
And affect him, yeah.
Art isn't more important than the world.
And his art isn't separate from the world.
Right.
Like, I think that's a real trap that us artists and creatives get into, is thinking that we're somehow not part of the world and that we need to be completely hermetically sealed from it to make our art.
Yeah.
And first of all, that's not possible. But second of all, the world is what feeds us.
Right.
The world is what gives us our ideas, our inspiration, you know, our little moments of serendipity.
Right.
That might spark something off. Like, you actually don't really spark anything off in that idealized vacuum a lot of us fantasize about.
And Snufkin doesn't create the tune in this story, but he does come up with a name.
Yeah.
And when he comes up with that name, it is inspired by the world around him. He hears the sound of the birds, and these things allow him to weave the magic that all of us creatives like to think of ourselves as weaving.
And he thinks this is a lesser creative task, doesn't he? That naming the little creep is less important than his tune. But then he gives the little creep its name, and it's so profound. It changes everything for Titi Wu.
And it's an offhand thing.
Yeah.
And often this is the case when you're creating stuff. The things that you're chasing, the things that you're pouring your heart and soul in and trying to craft, often don't turn out as kind of magical as something that you tossed off like on the side as an afterthought. So, I mean, quite a complex fable as fables go in terms of morals. But I think that's because it's a moral that deals with the intangible.
Yeah. It's sort of about meditation at the beginning as well. Like, it shows how Snufkin is careful not to leap on the tune.
Right.
Because if you try and bring it out too soon, it sort of comes out sideways and sometimes not as good as it would have been.
The theme tune of this podcast functioned like that. I had the little refrain of the music for months and months and sort of was playing it on any keyboard or piano that I came across in different places, feeling very intimidated because it's a very simple.
It's really good, Dave. I love it.
It's a very simple little tune. And so, like, there would always be, like, actual good musicians about, and I'd be like, bonk, plonk, 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 just aware that they're like, why has he sat down at that piano playing that kind of half little ditty that doesn't really exist? Why isn't he playing something good?
No, you know, actual musicians will have known exactly what you were doing.
Maybe.
That's what they do too.
I'm not sure they were songwriters. They were more performers, so they maybe wouldn't.
Even so, I reckon they probably knew.
You're right. A lot of that is projection. But then when it came, it comes all in one.
Yeah.
Like, when I put the theme tune down, I, like, got my instruments, I set up my recording setup, and then what happened very quickly and in the moment and fully formed like Athena from Zeus's head, which I often think Athena springing from Zeus's head fully formed, as is her birth, is a very good metaphor for how it is to create.
Yeah.
It's been gestating inside your brain, and then it just comes out all in one. By this time, you'll have heard the flute version of the theme tune. And I actually, in some ways, like that better than the original.
And it wouldn't have happened without that picture of Snufkin with his flute.
Right.
I write much longer form pieces, but chapters come to me almost fully formed. I will think about a chapter for a long time and know sort of exactly the notes I need to hit. Who needs to be where? What needs to move from A to B, all that stuff. But then very often I sit down to write that chapter, and it's happened before that, like, there's been a little sort of proverb printed along the side of my pencil. I've started the chapter with that, and then I've gone off and done something completely different that I wasn't expecting, that I hadn't planned, that's actually one of those bursts of inspiration, didn't come from anywhere things. And what I've done in my current work in progress is I've given those stories a character. So when one of those comes, that's a captain chapter, and that's him telling a story to one of the main characters, who's his son. So I've sort of given them a voice, and they're some of the best chapters. They don't move the plot forward in an obvious way, but definitely, like, if you wanted to read just a snippet and you wanted a decontextualized piece, those are the good bits, is the bits when I'm sort of a little bit inhabited by one of my characters.
It's interesting that you're saying that, because I've written novels and I'm similar. Like, I will have notes, I will plan it all out and I'll think about all of that. But when I write it, it's very much all in one. Like, I'll give up a week of my life and bang out a draft. And it won't be the final draft and all of that stuff. But I actually can't do it unless it's like Snufkin's song and comes all out in one go. If I stop, those have been the novels I've not finished. What I was going to say about this as well is, of course, me and Nina are creators, Snufkin is a creator, but also Tove Jansson is a creator. And so this is obviously going to be partly about her process. It's also going to be about Atos, the person who Snufkin is based on.
Yeah.
And there's a moment when the little creep comes up to Snufkin where Snufkin is essentially being treated like a rock star, right?
Yeah.
Or like a famous author. Like,
and it's so uncomfortable.
That whole exchange felt very much like a writer like admitting to, sometimes people bother me in a cafe and I'm like, yeah, go away. And then I obsess about it afterwards and think, damn it, I was mean. We know that Tuve, when bothered by little creeps in letters, felt that she had to reply to them all.
Yeah.
And Snufkin does feel that. He does go back. So I think there's a lot of Tuve in that. You know, other cultures, other civilizations over times have valued creativeness in a different way, made space for people who are not extroverts to be useful in their creative contributions to the rest of society.
Without needing them to be some kind of celebrity.
And so there's an interesting kind of commentary on that within this piece as well, because I don't think it's completely on the side of the little creep either. I think in that exchange, we can see that it's uncomfortable to be seen as like, oh, you're one of the Moomin family. You know all the cool people. It's also a bit like the soap opera, isn't it? It's like the little creeps in the woods are just watching this soap opera go on, the same way we are as readers.
Have you read Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert?
I have not.
Okay.
Why does it come to mind?
Because, so Elizabeth Gilbert is somebody who has been completely eclipsed by one piece of work that she made. She wrote Eat, Pray, Love.
Ah, yes. I am familiar with Elizabeth Gilbert. Now you've told me that part.
Yeah. So Eat, Pray, Love was this massive book. Like, I remember that summer that everybody read it. I read it. In some ways, it's enjoyable. In some ways, it's quite problematic. But in terms of Elizabeth Gilbert, like, that is a piece of work she did a long time ago. No one really wants to talk to her about anything else that she's done. And she's written lots of other books, including quite a lot of fiction. And no one's that interested in her fiction. So Big Magic is about creativity and about creativity separate from the product and separate from the reception of the product.
Sounds up my street.
It's quite a mystical take on creativity. Her idea is like, the ideas are out in the world and sometimes they'll come knocking. And the way she writes about it is like, have a love affair with your idea. Act like you're having an illicit affair, sneak it in around the corners, don't tell anyone about it. Like, that's how it needs to feel.
Right.
And if you ignore it, she says, don't worry about it. You don't write it, someone else will write it. It doesn't belong to you.
Right.
And she's got this story about, like, this novel that she had in her brain that she kept putting off and putting off and putting off. And then someone else who later became her friend wrote it. And in some ways, it feels weird, right? It's like, oh, that was my idea. It was very specifically my idea about a woman scientist researching fertility drugs in the Amazon. It was super specific. And right, she was like, right. No one else is ever going to think of this. Little interruption. This is Nina from the editing booth. I've remembered the name of the book. It's called State of Wonder, and it's by Anne Patchett. And Elizabeth Gilbert had to be like, okay, I didn't give that idea its time. And so it went and found someone else. And so you both should respect the muse when it comes, but also don't worry if it goes. It'll go to someone else. You're not wasting it. Like, the ideas that you have are not so unique that you should feel under a huge amount of pressure by them.
Right. Although I would also say, and I always say this to people who are creating in whatever medium, the thing is, if Elizabeth Gilbert had written that story,
it would have been different.
It would have been different.
Yeah.
It would have been her version of that story. As much as all of our ideas are collective, something that is equally and contradictorily true, only we can write that version of that story.
Yeah.
And that's a good way to think, because there aren't very many things that are original. But that's okay, because we are.
And the telling is unique, even if the kernel of story isn't.
And it's interesting that you talk about a love affair with the creative process, because that's very much what's happening in this book, right?
Yeah.
That there is three people in the relationship between Moomin Troll and Snufkin. The other person is the song, the muse.
Yeah.
And so Snufkin is weighing up whether to prioritize the actual person or the creative process. That is kind of what's happening in this, which I guess is a segue into your thoughts on non-monogamy within the book.
Yeah, so I'll read out that bit that made me think about non-monogamy, because it is just perfect. So he's thinking about his song. He's thinking, if it's really good, Moomin Troll compliment it, basically. Snufkin stopped in his tracks, feeling just a little bit uneasy. Yes, Moomin Troll, always waiting and longing. Moomin Troll, who sat at home, who waited for him and admired him, and who always told him, of course you have to feel free. Naturally you must go away. I do understand that you have to be alone at times. And all the times his eyes were black with disappointment and no one could help it.
Yeah.
If that isn't the most polyamorous sentence ever written.
Yeah, I mean, it's very relatable to people who've had non-monogamous relationships or engagements.
Like both of us.
But then it goes, I won't think of him now. He's a splendid Moomin, but I don't have to think of him tonight. Tonight, I'm alone with my tune. And tonight isn't tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how you have to think when you're in these kind of things. You have to be like, I'm with this person now.
Yeah.
And this is now, not tomorrow. And you have to give yourself fully to the person that you're with.
Yeah.
Whilst at the same time thinking of the other people.
Being considerate of Moomin Troll.
Yeah.
It's so great because Moomin Troll says all the right things. Do go off. Do have your time with your muse. Like, I understand it's important, but you can say that as much as you like if your eyes are begging for someone to never leave.
Right. Absolutely.
That's still not completely freeing them, you know? But also, like, that's on Snufkin to be able to put Moomin Troll out of his mind. It's on Moomin Troll to let Snufkin go. And it's on Snufkin to let Moomin Troll be a bit sad about it.
Absolutely. It is also about friendship. Like, yeah, all friendships are non-monogamous.
Well, nearly all.
You are having multiple friendships at the same time,
yeah,
and having to balance those different people's feelings with each other and your own feelings. It's also, as I mentioned, introverts and extroverts and ambiverts,
yeah,
and how those things work. It's also the adventurer and the person who doesn't like to go on adventures, the homekeeper, yeah, which I guess segues into Greek myths a little bit, because I think that you can see Moomin Troll as Penelope,
yes,
and Snufkin as Odysseus.
Yes.
So for people who are not familiar with the Odyssey by Homer, which is the most famous version of this myth, Odysseus went to the war against Troy and fought in that Trojan War. He was the dude. Heroic because he was clever. His patron was, again, my top god, Athena. Odysseus goes off in his boat with all of his buddies. They get kind of turned around a bit, end up getting cursed and can't get home. All the time that Odysseus, with the help of Athena, is trying to get back to his home, and more complications happen. He has sex with more and more people. He forgets his whole life and,
yeah,
then refinds it again. And he has all sorts of amazing adventures. All the time that that's happening, Penelope is at home, waiting faithfully.
My husband Odysseus, I now know that you are in the land of the dead. They say that Circe, your witch friend, told you the consultation was necessary. I suppose I should be grateful that she only persuaded you to sail to the end of the world to do her bidding. Some women really will do anything to avoid returning a husband to his wife, but honestly, Odysseus, did you believe this journey was necessary? I think it is fair to consider this one of your more unusual choices. The other Greeks have all returned to warm, some less warm, homecomings. But you followed the advice of Circe, an enchantress you knew you could not trust, and found yourself in the darkest region, pouring sacrificial blood into a trench to lure the spirits up from Erebus. And when Tiresias arrived, drawn by the stench of animal blood, what did he tell you? What I've already told you, with none of the inconvenience of a trip to hell and back. You have offended Poseidon by blinding his son. Your journey home is more difficult and more treacherous than that of any other Greek, because you've earned the enmity of a god. Then Tiresias fluttered away into the blackness, and your mother, Anticlea, finally approached you and drank the blood which feeds the dead. Her horror when she recognized you must have been quite terrible to witness, for on her deathbed she'd been hoping you would return before too many more moons. She died of a broken heart, Odysseus, waiting for her son to come home. First you asked your mother how she had died. Then you asked after the health of your father. Then your son. Then your honor. Then your throne. And then, when you'd asked about everything else except the dog, you remembered to ask after your wife. Once you'd finished speaking to your mother, you stayed among the dead for a little while longer. You saw Alcmena, Epicast, Leda, Phaedra, Ariadne. Even dead women can't seem to leave you alone. But I could listen to no more by then, I'm afraid, and retired to my bed. To our bed. Perhaps you remember it. The dog is fine, by the way. Getting older, but aren't we all? Penelope. From A Thousand Ships by Natalie Haynes.
So, we've done our Greek myth deep dive. What next?
Should we go from there to the moon then, and the wishing that Snufkin does on the moon?
Yeah, some good magic.
Yeah.
So the final picture in this story is a moon over a woodland, and it is a very distinctive moon. What moon would you say it was?
The dying moon, right?
So that's a waning crescent, not a new moon.
Yeah.
Because a new moon is hard to represent, because a new moon is kind of an empty space. It's a strange thing to wish on. It makes sense to me as well to wish on an emptiness, because a space is something that gets filled.
Yeah.
And maybe it gets filled by your wish. But this picture is not of the new moon.
No. It's one of her things where she set herself something too difficult to draw and done something else.
Could be a translation thing, but I suspect it's Tuva, yeah.
So I've got a similar question about Titiwu, the name of the little creep, which is taken from the call of the bird. Like, is that a transliteration? Like, was that the sound that the bird made in Swedish? Or has the translator picked a different word for us and therefore a different bird?
Could be an owl.
Oh, Tuitu. Yeah. Could be.
Which would connect back with the Athena.
Yeah, with the Athena thing.
Speaking of the name, what size do you need to be to get one?
Maybe that's the other moral of the story, is you're never too small for a name.
And going back to the flood.
Sniff didn't have a name.
Sniff was introduced as the little creature. Maybe he was too small to have a name. And then he got big enough to have a name in between the flood and Comet and Moomin Land.
So I think there is a historical precedent for this, that in times when the death of children before about the age of two was super common.
Oh, right. Don't name them so you don't get too attached.
Yeah. Or like just use a placeholder name so you don't get too attached. And also so you don't work through all your favourite names and then have all those children die. You would give them a proper name when they were sort of past that cusp of infant mortality.
Grim, but fair. I mean, some cultures also name themselves. You name yourself in adolescence.
Yeah, a lot of Native American cultures do that.
Indeed. Or you like have a moment where you re-evaluate your name. Like you maybe re-ascribe it. It might be the same name, but you take ownership of it. There's a lot of those kind of ceremonies in all sorts of cultures. I mean, you know, I'm thinking of bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs.
Yeah. Or confirmations in the Catholic Church.
Right. So maybe it's also to do with that. And it's a similar concept.
Yeah.
You get to a size, you're a person with agency and you're in charge of your life. And before then, your parents are.
Yeah, because after he's named, he moves out from his mum's. That's it. He's a grown up now.
Right. Speaking of the little creep as well, another thing that the little creep reminds me of is the man from Porlock. For people who don't know, when the poet Samuel Taylor Coleridge was writing the epic poem, or was supposed to be epic poem, Kubla Khan, he got only through a certain amount. I mean, he was on opium, so this was a kind of fever dream of the muses, when at a certain point, the man from Porlock knocks on the door and disturbs him, and he never captured the rest of the poem, and it remains unfinished. I know about that because my dad used to call me and my brother small Porlockians and had a sign on his door saying, do not disturb or sometimes it would say, you can come in if you're a small Porlockian, but you must bow three times and enter quietly. And that was how you knew he was writing.
That's a great segue into my natural history corner, because it was also Coleridge who described birch as the most beautiful of forest trees, the lady of the woods. So the forest that Tynwchgyn is walking through in this story is birch forest. First of all, birch is a pioneer tree. During the last ice age, most of Europe was sort of completely deforested by the cold, and then the ice retreated, and pioneer trees are the first trees that come back after something like that happens. So there are huge birch forests in the north of Europe because of this, because it was all iced over. And then the pioneer trees came. Firs are also pioneer trees, like these sort of cold weather Arctic type trees called pioneer trees. They tend to have a fairly short lifespan for a tree, only like 80 to 100 years. And they tend to be trees that aren't that self-sustaining as a forest without being coppiced, which is being sort of strategically cut by beavers or people in a way that encourages new growth. Birches are also some of the first trees to wake up in spring, which I think partly explains their use in this story, because it's the coming of spring story. I'm going to read a little bit from a book called A Spell in the Forest by Roselle Angwin. Birch is one of the prettiest trees, almost ethereal, a fairy tree. Max Adams says it's the poet's tree. If it were ever threatened, it would be poets who would defend it. In Druidry, the birch is the tree that adopts the bard. It's also associated with witchiness a lot. One of the things you would traditionally do with birch is you would make a besom, a witch's broom. Something else that you might do with the twigs, though, which I think is also interesting for this story, is you would beat the bounds, which makes it the tree of boundaries.
Ooh.
You would get a bunch of birch twigs on a solstice, typically, and you would walk the boundaries of your property, the bounds where your property meets your neighbour's property, and you would hit them with the birch twigs. And everybody's agreeing, this is the line between your space and my space. We're all agreed, hit, 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 agreed. As was said in A Spell from the Forest as well, it's traditionally said that fairies live in birch forests, which explains why it's full of little creeps.
Yeah, and actually the picture in the dedication, I subsequently realised that maybe Sophia is playing with a little creep.
Yeah, I think so. In folklore, the birch in Northern Europe and Russia is seen as a sort of fairy godmother figure.
Yeah.
They've got a version of Cinderella where the fairy godmother is the birch. But I'm going to tell you a different story about the birch. I'm going to tell you the story of Nana Buju and how the birch got its scorch marks. I've read a few different versions of this story, so I'm going to tell you the version that I like best, but you should know that there are lots. Nana Buju is a trickster character from Native American folklore, specifically from Ojibwe folklore. The Ojibwe people live sort of between Ontario and Montana. Nana Buju is a shapeshifter, can turn into lots of different animals. Nana Buju is usually written as male, but not always, is sometimes written as female. And interestingly, Nana Buju, in quite a lot of stories, explores capitalistic ideas and sort of shows them to be bad and extractive.
A useful myth indeed.
Nana Buju lived with his grandmother. Her house was very cold. And she said to Nana Buju, can you do something about this? And he's like, yep, yep, yep. Where could I get something really hot and bright? And he says, oh, the Thunderbird's got loads of fire. I could steal the fire from the Thunderbird, but how am I going to get the Thunderbird to come down here? So he turns into a rabbit and he streaks across the plains, sort of inviting the Thunderbird to chase him. The Thunderbird can't resist, swoops, catches him, brings him back to his nest. And Nana Buju sort of pleads. He's like, oh, please, please, I'm so cold. I'll taste so much better when I'm cooked. And Thunderbird's like, okay. And the Thunderbird lights a fire in his hearth. Nana Buju, as a rabbit, flings himself into the fire, rolls in it, sort of piles the fire up on his back as a kind of coat, and then jumps down out of the Thunderbird's lair and runs away. The Thunderbird is super angry about this. He's chasing him. He's throwing bolts of lightning. And so Nana Buju takes refuge under a birch. And the birch gets all scorched. All its lovely, papery, white bark gets all these black marks from getting the thunderbolts thrown at it. Eventually, the Thunderbird goes, All right then, the birch has protected you, Nanabuju. I'm going to go away, but from ever on, there will be these black marks on the birch. And since then, the birch has been the friend of the Ojibwe people. It's one of their big protector trees, and it's all thanks to the protection that it gave first to Nanabuju when he stole the fire for his granny. The end. That was Natural History Corner plus Extra Fable.
I mean, I think there's quite a lot of permeable lines between fables and myths and your Natural History Corners.
Yes.
Nina doing natural history means a little bit of science and a lot of symbology, you know, which I think is good. It's like, we're going to talk about flowers and not really about the flowers as much as how cultures interpret the flowers. And that is great, but I'm not sure it's natural history in the truest sense. So I guess one of the things I felt that this story was about, probably because I have an official diagnosis in the condition, is anxiety. Just like when you obsess over a thing, the conversation often, and you're obsessing about it. Snufkin obsesses over what happens with the creep. And he's also obsessing about Moomin Troll as well. And just like when you obsess about these things in real life, it turns out when he meets the creep's not obsessing about it at all.
No.
The creep has not been offended. In fact, he only had a positive experience.
Yeah. Do you think that Snufkin treats the little creep that way because he's projecting Moomin Trollness onto him?
I think that's true. Also, he's aware that he was interrupted and so felt angry.
Yeah.
Often when we feel angry, we think we've communicated that to people. And often we haven't.
He's being short for him. He's falling short of his own standards for friendliness. But he's not actually that bad.
Isn't that the way it is if you're anxious? It's your own standards that you're trying to live up to.
Yeah.
There is a kind of meditation to what Snufkin is doing. Like, obviously, he's feeling, in some regards, anxious about the level that Moomin Troll feels about him. But he is addressing that slightly through avoidance.
Yeah.
We all like that. We all love a little avoidance. But he's also doing it through creativity, through putting his feelings into his song. And his song is about how much he loves to be alone.
Yeah.
He loves to be alone. And like he says, as Nina kind of paraphrased, you can't ever be really free if you admire somebody too much. That means that his aloneness is under threat. But also that maybe you'll never be fully whole.
Yeah.
If you never admire anyone. That line is not written in this, but I do think it's implied within it that he has to connect.
Yeah.
He can't just be alone, no matter how much he loves it. And this reminded me, all of this reminded me of a song. It's the song Hyper Ballad by Bjork. I think that's kind of what Snufkin is doing. He's going through his version of throwing things off this top of the mountain. He's going through his ritual of aloneness so that when he comes back to Moomin Troll, he can be present and there with Moomin Troll. Those things are intrinsically linked. If Snufkin didn't go off and search, he wouldn't be able to love Moomin Troll the way he loves him when he sees him. And maybe if Snufkin didn't go away, Moomin Troll wouldn't be able to love Snufkin as much as he does when he comes back. Certainly, Snufkin would not be as open to being loved.
No.
The tune changes, because when we first meet the tune is about the great delight of walking alone and liking it. But through the experience that Snufkin has had, meeting the creep and naming him and all of that, the tune changes. The words are almost entirely the same, apart from the last sentence is a colossal delight at being alone.
Yeah.
It's no longer about the specifics of Snufkin walking. That's almost like the original version of the tune, walking alone and liking it, is a defensive version. That's like what he wants Moomin Troll to understand. Whereas through the process, he's made peace with it, maybe. So it's about the colossal delight of being alone.
Yeah.
It's a celebration, not a defense. The other thought I had around this was that maybe through this process of creating this tune or trying to capture this tune that already exists, he's realized that, like the little creep, Moomin Troll has his own busy life.
Yes.
And whilst he may get stuck and feel sad that Snufkin's not there, he will get over that. And he will have his own adventures.
Yeah.
Spring is when Snufkin often will arrive in Moomin Valley. And it can be implied, because the book is called Tales from Moomin Valley, that that is kind of where he's going.
He's also flexible about when he gets there. He always leaves Moomin Troll a note. He says, I'll be back in the spring. Doesn't say what day, doesn't say what time.
Right.
It'll just be at some point. In this story, he's just added like a day to his journey, maybe two.
Right. But he's not wrong. Moomin Troll will be getting stressed about it. We've seen that in Moomin Summer Madness.
I know. But that's for Moomin Troll to manage.
Yeah.
It's not actually for Snufkin to worry about. Snufkin can't help worrying about it a little bit. But like, Moomin Troll's job is to have feelings about it. And Snufkin's job is to hold the boundary.
And Moomin Troll's got a lot of other issues to work through. He's got to work on his codependence with his mother.
Yeah.
He's got to work out how to show affection to the Snork Maiden in a way that's more genuine than just parroting his parents.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of issues, Moomin Troll. It's not on Snufkin to fix him. He's got to fix himself. At this point in our podcast, we like to answer a question, considering what would Snufkin do? And how appropriate that is for this episode, since it is a Snufkin-only story. If you want to ask a question to Snufkin, we'll take any question you like. Hopefully I'm not sounding too desperate here. We're not sitting here like Moomin Troll waiting for your questions to come.
With our big black eyes.
Yeah. Where are our questions? Where are they? They were supposed to be here. It's spring already. You can find us on social media where we're at thepodgoblin and by email thepodhat@gmail.com.
This week, Barbara says, I just got offered my old job back. I'm an editor and this role is working on textbooks. I don't like textbooks. I did the job once to gain transferable skills. I've already done that, so not sure it's valuable for me personally / career-wise to redo it. I had hoped to apply those skills to different books altogether. However, I'm having real health troubles, and this job comes with excellent protections and sick pay. If I don't take it and stay freelance, there's a good chance I'd get more interesting work. However, I have no protections. What would Snufkin do?
Well, Snufkin would have much better and more sage advice for you than me. So hopefully his will be great advice, because as a freelancer that's been freelance since 2014, working in the arts, oh boy, freelancing, whoa no. But I do know some freelancers who have made it work for them. It's a complicated question in some ways, and there are no right answers, I suspect.
Yeah.
Like most things about what are you going to do with your life, the final answer is hard to have, to know, to find. What we definitely know that Snufkin would do is probably sing you a song, tell you a story.
I held back this question for this story because I think there is something in this story about the balance between meeting obligations and doing the sensible thing versus following your heart, following your muse. Your heart, Barbara, is not in textbooks. And yet textbooks would meet some real need that you have for security around your health and your healthcare. And this is something that everybody under capitalism has to sort of try and make that balance for themselves. It's also true that because you're ill, that balance is harder to strike for disabled people.
Yeah.
And that's just not fair. Snufkin would follow his heart probably, but Snufkin lives in a world where he's safe, where he'll be looked after if he's ill.
But it's also worth considering the fact that there are no safe routes.
Yes.
You can't know what will be safe till you try it. You can wish on the new moon for a new path, but until you walk that path, you're not going to fully know. And as someone who's made the choice to be a freelancer, thinking that it might bring more interesting things with it, you could end up with the worst of both worlds. You could end up as a freelancer only being able to get textbook work.
Yeah.
And that is very analogous to my life of only being able to get the kinds of podcasts that I end up making for clients, which are not like this one, which I make for free. So there is that. There's no safe pathway. And similarly, if you choose textbooks, the company could fall through in a year.
Yeah.
Like, you just don't know what's going to happen. You can't fully predict the future.
I would remind you that you are as entitled to follow your dream as the version of you that wasn't ill.
Absolutely.
Like, the version of you that is ill still gets to be ambitious, still gets to have big plans, big ideas. It's not fair that this is harder for you, but everybody always is entitled to their hopes and dreams. There isn't going to be a comfortable path. Snufkin's path in this story isn't comfortable. He sort of goes back on himself. He sort of changes his mind. You can do that too.
Yep.
You can decide to be freelance for a while and then it doesn't work and you get a job. Or you could take the job, decide it's not working and go freelance. Your decision that you make now doesn't bind you forever.
Whatever decision you make is not a forever decision. You can always reevaluate. You can always wish on a new moon and find a new tune.
Yeah.
And it might even be a tune that's neither of these two current ones that you're thinking about.
Whatever you decide, you will learn more. Like, Snufkin decided to be kind of short with a little creep and then walk off. He decided that he learned that didn't feel good. That's valuable data.
But ultimately, you know, Snufkin is not the most useful here because he is happy when his knapsack is nearly empty.
Yeah.
And not very many of us are happy when our knapsack is nearly empty.
Snufkin is blessed with good health,
yep,
plentiful resources.
He can always drop in on a Moomin,
yep,
and get some jam anytime he wants.
You live a more complicated reality than Snufkin does in this story. But I think Snufkin would trust you to make the decision that's right for you now and to reevaluate it whenever you want to reevaluate it. Snufkin has a lot of trust in other people. He has to learn to trust Moomin Troll in this story to cope with his things. He would trust you to decide here, and it's always okay to change your mind. Hope that helps, Barbara.
Good luck.
Dave is up first this week with their Spirit of the Moomins. Spirit of the Moomins is a piece of art or piece of work that reminds us of the Moomins in some way. And what's yours?
Well, this week I decided that I wanted to pick some tunes because this story is about music. So I'm going to choose the songs of Regina Spektor.
This is Dave from the future with a quick note. When we recorded this episode, it was a slightly different time in terms of global politics and the genocide taking place in Gaza in Palestine was not in the situation that it is in now. And Regina Spektor had not made the comments that she's made on Instagram at that time. And so I just want to say that whilst we're going to keep this recommendation in the show, you, the listener, can make your own mind up about whether you want to completely ignore it, because For clarity, Regina Spektor is somebody who lives in the United States, which has a lot of anti-Semitism in it. She is somebody who's come from Russia and experienced lots of anti-Semitism in her own personal life. And her position on Palestine, whilst it is not the correct one, in my view, it is not free Palestine. It is at least a liberal position of like, nobody should die. But she very much identifies with the hostages and with the narrative around the hostages justifying Israel's response, which is not something that I or Nina or the Podgoblin's Hat endorse in any way. It is wrong and it must cease. People may know her songs. They do get about. Orange is the New Black. The theme tune to that is by Regina Spektor. For me, I think that her songs really embody what this new tune was trying to be. Like one part expectation, two parts spring sadness, and for the rest, just the great delight of walking alone and liking it. That feels very Regina Spektor. There's always some sadness. There's always some joy. And there's always a complex mix of things, and you kind of go between different emotional states. Her songs are often quite cute and innocent and silly and fun, which are all things that the Moomins can be. I think her songs are very philosophical, very poetic, often very melancholy, often full of joy, and always very serious. And I think that those are all things that are very Moomin-y. If I was going to give you the most Moomin-y songs by Regina Spektor, these are some suggestions. But obviously, I'm telling you to listen to everything she's written. I love her. She's one of the best songwriters, in my opinion, of all time. Ones that remind me of the Moomins when I was listening to her songs as preparation for this episode. Two Birds is a very obvious one because it's about two birds on a wire, and that's quite like the cute sort of things that happen in Moomin Valley. There's Ghost of Corporate Future.
Man walks out of his apartment. It is raining, he's got no umbrella. He starts running beneath the awnings, trying to save his suit. Trying to save his suit. Trying to dry and to dry and to dry, but no good. When he gets to the crowded subway platform, he takes off both of his shoes. He steps right into somebody's fat loogie, and everyone who sees him says ew. Everyone who sees him says ew. But he doesn't care, 'cause last night he got a visit from the ghost of corporate future. The ghost said, take off both your shoes, whatever chances you get, especially when they're wet.
There's the song Fidelity, which is again basically Snufkin in this story trying to deal with Moomin Troll. And then there's the song Becoming All Alone, which seems very appropriate to Snufkin's concerns within this story.
I've been walking home alone, past all the bars and corner delis, when I heard God call out my name. He said, hey, let's grab a beer. It's awful late. We both right here. And we didn't even have to pay. 'Cause God is God and he's revered. And I said, why isn't it good? Coming all alone again. Stay, stay, stay.
So yeah, listen to Regina Spektor. Make everyone you know listen to Regina Spektor. That's the great thing about music, is you can bother everyone without officially bothering them. Just play it in your room and they'll go, who's that you're listening to? And then you've got them into it without trying to recommend something, which, as me and Nina both know, because we recommend things to each other all the time, is a surefire way of probably them not ever listening to the song.
Stop the meter, sir.
Anyway, Nina, what is your recommendation, your Spirit of the Moomins this week?
Well, I thought since I told you an Ojibwe folk tale, I should tell you where to get more and also where you can find them told by people from those populations. So I'm going to recommend, this is a children's book. It's called The Girl Who Helped Thunder and Other Native American Folk Tales. It's by Joseph Bruchak and his son, James Bruchak, who are of the Abenaki tribe in Canada. Joseph Bruchak has written a lot of books. He writes a lot of his own stories, but this is him and his son retelling traditional stories from different native populations across the American continents. So the stories are organized by area of the world that they come from. Each sort of big chapter of stories will come with a little bit of context about, you know, this is the part of the continent that I'm talking about, these are the different populations who live here, and here are a couple of things about those populations that contextualize this story. They're written in this really accessible language for children. The illustrations are by Stefano Vitale, and they're really, really good. They really bring it all to life. Some of them look a little bit like the kind of paintings that you would find on a cave wall, but sort of more 3D than that. Some of them sound like folk tales from other parts of the world, and Joseph Bruchak is good at sort of like connecting those without saying like, no, this is our story, and without saying like this has been stolen, just saying, you know, like, this idea is part of the collective unconscious, we will find it in other places, I'm just going to tell you like the Abenaki version of this or the Ojibwe version of this. I really love folk tales. I love folk tales from different parts of the world. There isn't a Nana Buju story in this collection, I checked, and he is one of my favourites. But I really love the first story in the collection, which is about how stories came to be, and I feel like it's quite fitting for what we're talking about with muses, in that stories are an exchange. You give something and you take something. Yeah, so seek that out wherever you get your books. Library, preferably. Which is where I found it,
or one of the reputable bookshops that are not as exploitative of as the most obvious ones.
Yeah. So our next rubric on this podcast is called Spirit of the Podgoblin's Hat. It's typically but not always a podcast, typically but not always a work of critical fandom. What's yours this week?
My recommendation this week is the podcast Song by Song. Clearly, it's thematically relevant because this is a episode about tunes. Song by Song is a podcast celebrating the music of Tom Waits, hosted by podcaster musician Martin Zoltz-Oswick and actor musician Sam Pei. And they're basically going through all of Tom Waits' back catalogue from the first song to the last, and including all of the films and all of the other stuff that he does on the way. They're quite close to doing every one of Tom Waits' songs.
Are they going chronologically like us?
They are. They're, right. Like us, they're going chronologically. Like us, they like to mix it up by comparing and contrasting other songs and singers and musicians. So they'll do the song, and then they'll do an interval song that's by another musician that connects to the song that they're talking about to enlarge their conversations. They have pretty short episodes, certainly shorter than ours. I've been a guest a couple of times with my ex-partner. It's a great podcast. They have different guests on for a few episodes at a time, so you hear lots of voices that aren't theirs as well as their voices. Sometimes, though, it's just them. Like our show, hopefully, by going chronologically, they learn new things. Mm. Give it a listen. It's great. So that's all for episode 16, but we have some changes to the schedule coming up.
Next week, we won't be continuing with Tales from Moomin Valley, although we will go on with them later this year. But inspired by this story and the recently released computer game, Snufkin, Melody of Moomin Valley, We are having a little season about spring and music.
So our next episode is technically a bonus episode, and we'll cover that video game, and then we'll have some guests on to talk about various Moomin-related songs and tunes.
But first, the tiny cliffhangers for our next episode.
What instruments will Snufkin play?
What will happen when Snufkin meets the Grok?
And will Snufkin manage to find Moomin Troll and restore Moomin Valley to its former glory?
Until next week, make sure to name your little creeps generously.
Little creeps!
Bye.
Bye.